Good evening. That'll do. It's good to be back up before you again. It's been a while since I've had the pleasure of being able to bring a lesson from the pulpit. Last weekend, we had our annual youth winter retreat. I want to say this was perhaps the 12th or 13th year that that Woodland Oaks has taken a group of teenagers on a retreat. In past years, we've gone to Brazos Valley Youth Camp up in Snook. But last year, due to the changing of hands at Brazos Valley, we changed our location. We are now going to Hensel Camp in Marble Falls. Many of you, as I've talked to, are familiar with it, have been over the course of time, but this year we had a very good group. People have asked me numerous times if I have recovered, and getting there. it's every year has become a little bit harder to get over because I come back to some different things. This year I came back to an 18-pound screaming baby at night, made it a little bit more difficult. But it's also a lot harder to recoup when guys like Doug Peek and Matt Tisdale decide that it's going to be a Wrestle the Youth Minister weekend, especially when Doug at least is much stronger than I am. But it's a lot of fun. And I hope that one day those of you that are coming up into the youth group, that you'll be able to come join us for that. As I said, we went to Hensel Camp in Marble Falls. This year we had a grand total of 38 people on this retreat, a good number to take. There were 25 teenagers and 13 adults who went with us. Of that 38, 18 adults and teens were there for the first time. And that's always an encouraging thing to see that we have new people coming up through the ranks, not just as students, but as adults who are willing to step into that leadership role and be a part of the lives of these teenagers. And it's just a very good weekend. Out of that, we have, since coming back, we've had one baptism. Victoria Roth was baptized into Christ on Wednesday night. We hope that within the coming weeks we will have one or two more from Bible studies that are taking place in their homes. I believe everybody was encouraged, and we hope that maybe there's a fire that's been lit in some of these kids to really take on leadership. Our theme this year was STEP, the steps of leadership. And it was quite literally, as it says, we say if you're going to be a leader, whether it be in your church, or whether it be on your team, at school, or in a club, or in the class, wherever it may be, there are some certain steps that need to be taken. And we talked about the fact that a leader must step up, which here in a minute I'd like to give to you the thoughts that we gave on Friday night about stepping up into leadership. But we also note that a leader must step down. Humility. Arrogance steps in the way of, and will mess up a lot of people who are in leadership roles. But a leader must also step out. One of the best forms of leadership is to be an example, to be the person who does the work and gives somebody an example worth following. We also noted that sometimes a leader must step back. True leaders will realize that, you know what, I may not be the best person for every single job that comes along. And as a biblical leader, I think we see that God expects us, and goes hand in hand with humility, but God expects us to step back and let someone else step into the lead role when they are the better person for the job. And on Saturday night, we stepped about the fact that any leader, true biblical leaders, will step behind. They step behind the Savior. They follow Christ. And only when we follow Christ do we become the leaders that He truly wants us to be. I think if you were to grab any of these teenagers and adults, they would tell you that it was an encouraging weekend. And we had a good time. And I look forward to the years that we have ahead of us and seeing more and more of our teenagers come up through the ranks and enjoy the weekend that we have there. But as I said, tonight I'd like to give you our thoughts that we presented on Friday night. Step up. When we first got there and the kids sat down for a devotional, they could see on the little stage, there was on each side of the stage, you had a stack of two cinder blocks. And I called Doug Peek to come up on the stage. And I said, Doug, you have a challenge. I want you to bust up these two center blocks as quickly as you can. And I gave him a regular claw hammer. And he was ready to do it. And, you know, Doug's a good, strong guy. He can bust them up no problem. But then I said, you know, but before you do that, I want to see if anybody in this crowd thinks that they can bust up two more cinder blocks as quickly or even maybe more quickly, quicker, faster than Doug. And Ashley Purvis steps up. She says, I can do it. And so I go to reach out and give Ashley her claw hammer. She says, nope. You know what, Corey? I think I'm going to use the mallet. And she reaches behind a podium and pulls out a mallet. And so now she's got more firepower than Doug, thinking, okay, I can do this. And then, so we get ready. We get the kids counting off. One, two. Ashley says, wait a minute, Corey. You know what? I think I can do one better. And she reaches in, which I didn't put a picture of, reaches out and pulls out a big sledgehammer. Okay, are you ready, Ashley? Yeah, I'm ready. I can beat him now. I know I can beat him. I can bust these things up a whole lot faster than Doug can. I gave it one, two, three, and they both started at it, and Doug was hammering away as hard as he could. I think he took maybe four or five swipes, and those center blocks were busted. Ashley took three, and they were done. And when it was all done, I stood them side by side and said, you know, when I bring these two up and put them side by side, there are some obvious differences in their capabilities. All logic tells you that Doug should win this competition or this race hands down. No questions asked. Ashley has no business being on the same level in the same competition as Doug. But when you look at the fact that Ashley has confidence in her challenge, if you will, because she knows that she has superior firepower. She knows she has something at her disposal that Doug can never match. It gives you a different perspective. Something, maybe a more accurate idea of who could and perhaps should win this battle or challenge. As we look at leaders and the fact that a leader must step up, there are three things that I think all leaders always do. A leader will always see the problem or the need that's at hand. And we do a good job of this. We can all look around in whatever community or scenario we're in, and we can easily pinpoint faults or needs or problems that something ought to be done. Something's got to be done about this. But a leader does more than just simply sees the problem. A leader will go to the next step and actually state the problem. I know that there are a lot of people who sit back and to themselves, they say, that needs to be done. And okay, that's a big hole that needs to be filled. But a leader will step and say, you know what? Here's a problem that needs to be addressed. Make sure that they themselves and everyone in that circle understands we have a need. We have a problem. But I've also seen a lot of people who will state the problem and do nothing about it. Sometimes we might classify this as complaining or griping because all they do is simply point out the fault, point out the flaws and the holes. A true leader is going to go and take a third step. They're going to step up to that problem and do something about it. Not just be content to sit back and say somebody needs to do this. And so as we look at these three steps, I want to take a look at two leaders out of the Old Testament who faced the same problem but reacted to it in two totally different ways. Saul and David. If you want to go ahead and turn to 1 Samuel 17, we're going to be there in just a couple of minutes. But before we go through and we look at the story of David and Goliath, Think of Saul and David side by side, much like we might put Doug and Ashley side by side. Saul, I think, we give Saul a bad rap immediately going into a lot of these stories because we know how Saul turns out later on in life. And I think that's probably, it's not something we need to be doing, because think about Saul's position. Saul is God's anointed leader for the nation of Israel. He is selected out of all the men. He is the leader that God said, I want him. And what was that job? He was the first king of Israel. How'd you like to have that job? For hundreds of years, you followed God and the judges, and this nation has never had royalty, a monarchy, and you get selected to be the first one. We were looking at this story in Bible class on Wednesday night, and I said, you know, Samuel tells the people of Israel, you have rejected God. You have sinned by asking for a king. Here he is. I don't want to be Saul. But he's God's anointed. He's the king. He's the biggest man in the kingdom. We always note this. He's head and shoulders above everyone else. An intimidating figure. And I'm sure when he steps out on the battlefield and he's got his armor on and perhaps on his horse, whatever the picture would have been, I'm sure he was a very intimidating figure to look at. But note as well that by the time we get to 1 Samuel 17, Saul is a trained and seasoned warrior. You look at the chapters ahead of this, he's fought in many battles, he's defeated many men, and he's led Israel to several victories that were pretty significant victories. Saul is no sissy. He is a worthy man to view and have as a leader. But then you look at David beside him. David is the youngest of eight brothers. Estimates have ranged maybe at the time of David and Goliath, he was somewhere from 11 to 14, maybe 15. We don't really know. But what we do know is that he was not old enough to be out on the battlefield, because he wasn't there. All the rest of his brothers were, but David was not. David, instead, was looking up to them. He followed their example all the time. Hey, if you had seven older brothers, wouldn't you have some heroes in your life? Probably so. I think David probably had these guys that he held up on this pedestal. And what was his daily job? He went out into the field and he tended sheep. A noble job if you keep looking through the scriptures, but not one. I don't think a lot of people in that day viewed it as a very noble job. And probably the most interesting point or significant point that I would think of is that as David steps up into this story with Goliath, David is not trained in battle. He has no business being on a battlefield. And everyone around him knows that. And some go so far as to say that, which we'll note later. But here's the picture that you have of these two men standing side by side. One is intimidating, a worthy leader, at least at face value. The other one, okay, he's done some good things, but and has potential. But right now, I don't know that I'd give him a whole lot of credit. But what's the problem? What's the picture we have going on here? If you turn to 1 Samuel 17, we see that the Philistine army and Israel's army are gathered on opposite hills. The picture that I get is, you know, it's got this valley down in between, and they step up to the edge of the hill and they form their line and they get ready to shout their battle cries to try to intimidate the other one and try to gain just a little bit of an edge on this battle that's about to take place. You can see all of Israel lined up there and Saul standing out in front with his spear and his shield and sword and very, very capable leader. And you see all the Philistines standing over there. They're a big army. And they're powerful warriors. But then all of a sudden Israel encounters something that they don't expect. From the back of the line, you see this beast of a man step through. Some of the kids, we were laughing. He said, boom, boom. You feel the ground shake. And Goliath steps out in front. 9 feet tall. Trained in battle since he was a kid. And notice what he says in verse 8 of 1 Samuel 17. When he stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, why have you come down and come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not servants of Saul? Choose for yourselves one man to come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and he wins, we will be your servants. But if I defeat your champion, if I defeat the man that you choose, you will be our servants and will serve us. This day, I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man that we may fight together. Goliath has issued a challenge. And a lot of times I think we look at this story and we say, well, the problem was that Goliath has given a challenge. And, you know, hey, that's a risky thing. You send out a small guy against this 9-foot giant, you know. The odds don't look too great. But God, folks, I don't think that's the problem. The problem is not that there's a 9-foot giant challenging an army. The problem is that this 9-foot giant has shouted out, I defy the ranks of God. He didn't defy an army. He defied Yahweh, the creator of the universe. You'd think that somebody might get a little bit upset about that. You'd think somebody might get ready to challenge this man and take him down because he's cursed God, he's defied God. But let's look at what Saul's reaction is. Did Saul see the problem? Sure he did. He was there. Being king of Israel, he was probably standing at the front line, getting ready to charge down into the field. He saw the problem. He heard what Goliath said. But what did he do? In verse 11, Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, and they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, there's no problem, I don't believe, with being afraid of what you see, being afraid of the problem that lies in front of us. The problem can come is, what do you do after you see the problem? Well, what is about Saul? Does he state the problem? Sure he does, but he doesn't do it in the way that we think he probably should. Look at verse 25. And the men of Israel said, they're talking to David at this point. The men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches, and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. How did Saul state the problem? He said, okay, Goliath's out there challenging us. If somebody else will do it, I'll make it worth your while if you'll go out and do it. Too many times I think we fall into the same trap. We see the problem. We're present when it comes up, but we're not willing to do something about it. Instead, we sit back and we want to tell everybody what the problem is, and we want somebody else to do it. Even though we may be the one who needs to be handling it, we want someone else to take over the matter. And Saul does that. He states it by offering wealth to the person who will do the job for him. So does he step up to the problem? No. Saul runs and he hides and he cowers in his tent. Every morning as Goliath comes out, 30 days Goliath comes out, issues this challenge, and every day Saul runs and he hides in his tent. How does David react to it? Does David see the problem? Sure he does. We know that he has come to visit his brothers. We see in verse 23, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines, and he spoke the same words as before, and David heard him. David knew what was happening, and he saw it real quick. It didn't take him a long time to figure this out. And so what does David do as far as stating the problem? One of the things I love is that David states the reality of it. He doesn't beat around the bush. He says in verse 26, what's going to be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach of Israel? He notes that Israel has been shamed at this point in time. Because, for who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? David saw the problem for what it was. This wasn't just simply a battle cry or a challenge. This was a man, a Gentile, a pagan, defying God. And nobody was doing anything about it. His oldest brothers, who he looked up to all of his life, they're running and hiding in their tents. They're shaking in their armor, as the song says. Saul, the king who should be out on the field, is hiding in his tent. But I want you to think about something. Has David actually said at this point, I'll fight him? For a long time, as I would review the story in my head, that's what I thought. David sees Goliath, and the first thing he says is, hey, if you won't do it, I'll do it. That's not what he does. He just points out the reality of the matter. I don't think David had any intention of doing anything. I don't think David intended to be out in that field with the sling and the five stones and throwing that thing and hitting Goliath. I don't think he intended for that. But once he started talking, big talk for an 11-year-old, and word starts circulating. There's this kid in the army, and he's stirring everybody up talking about Goliath. And so Saul says, get him in here now. And he brings him in. And Saul says, David, what are you doing? What are you talking about? I know what the problem is. I'm waiting on somebody to take care of it. But in verse 32, David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. In front of the very man who should have been on that field, David says, I'll do it. I'll take care of the problem. So what does David go up against when he decides to step up to it? There are three reactions that I see happening. First of all, he gets the reaction of his friends and family. Eliab, his older brother, says in verse 28, after David just merely stated what he saw, there's an uncircumcised Philistine who's defying God. Eliab says, it says his anger was kindled against David, and he said, why have you come down here? Who'd you lead the sheep with, David? Why aren't you tending to your job like you're supposed to? I know your presumption, and I know the evil of your heart, because the only reason you've come down here today is to see a battle. He had no faith in him. He put him down. And what does Saul say? Saul, the mentor that David, I think, had to have been looking at, because we do know that perhaps he's already been in Saul's service a couple of times. Saul says, you're too young. You're too small, David. This guy has been training to be a warrior since he was younger than you are, and look at him now. You can't go out against this giant. Leave it to somebody who's trained in warfare. And then he goes out to the enemy. And Saul, or Goliath rather, looks at David and he's insulted. You send out this kid? Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks and stones? What is this? David, I promise you today, I will crush your bones. How'd you like to be David hearing that from a 9-foot giant? You know, sometimes we may find the courage to step up to a problem. And we may get similar reactions. We may find our friends and our family, people who should be encouraging us along to take this job and run with it. They may tell us, you can't do this, that you're not the right person. You're only doing this to feed your own ego. And that's discouraging. That's discouraging to have the people you love and you trust and you look up to tell you, you can't do this. But then we may find our enemies, the people who are out there that don't want to see us succeed or for whatever reason have ill intentions towards us. And they tell the same thing, I'm going to crush you. You have no hope in doing what it is that you are setting out to do. That's discouraging. And if I was an 11 or 12-year-old kid who has finally said, I'll fight Goliath, and then everybody else tells me, no, you can't do it, I think I might have turned around and said, oh, you know, maybe you're right. You've got a lot more experience than I do, and maybe you're right. But not David. Because the third reaction David has to deal with is his own. Is he going to turn and run away from it? Is he going to shy away from the courage that he has just found to step up and do something? Is he going to shy away from it, or is he going to step out and actually do it? And we go on and we see in verse 34 that after Saul said, David, you can't do it. David says, but your servant David used to keep sheep for his father. And when a lion or a bear came along and he took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and I struck him. And I delivered that lamb out of the mouth. And if that lion or bear ever rose up against me again, I grabbed him by the beard, I threw him to the ground, and I beat him until he was dead. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. And this uncircumcised Philistine is going to be just like one of them. For he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine. And then to the Goliath, he says, Goliath, you come at me with the sword and with the spear and with the javelin, but I come to you in the name of Yahweh of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day Yahweh will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is Yahweh's, and he will give you into our hand. David knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that if he stepped up to this problem, as much as he did not belong on that battlefield by the looks, by everyone else's judgment, as much as he had no business talking as big as he was talking, he knew God would bring him through it if he would step up to the problem and do something about it. Before we finish, I want to show you a clip from the movie Facing the Giants. It came out a year or two ago. It's about a football team that's struggling tremendously. But the coach decides, you know what, I'm going to take a different approach to this. I'm not going to push them to win for the sake of football. I'm going to push them to live their lives and to play this game for the glory of God. And as he's introducing all of this, he challenges his kids in a way that, to me, every time I see this clip, I get chills going up my spine. So if you would, bear with me for just a couple minutes, and let's watch this, and we'll wrap it up.
Your attitude's like the aroma of your heart. If your attitude stinks, it means your heart's not right.
You sure is preaching today.
Mm-hmm. What?
How's your attitude, Brock?
It's fine.
Then you'll be okay with the death crawl, right?
Yeah.
Oh. All right, everybody on the goal line. Get your partner. Let's go. All right, let's go. Show me something. 10 yards. Move it. Let's go. Let's go, Matt. Let's go. Let's go, Jonathan. Show me something. 10 yards. Show me some power. No knees. Keep your knees off the ground. Show me something. There you go. 10 yards. Show me some muscle. Show me some power. Give me some heart. Let's go. Very good, boy. Very good. Let's run it back.
Oh, man. Oh, man. It's not even funny, dude.
So, Coach, how strong is Westview this year?
A lot stronger than we are.
You already written Friday night down as a loss, Brock?
Well, not if I know we could beat them.
Come here, Brock. You too, Jeremy.
What, am I in trouble now?
Not yet. I want to see you do the death crawl again, except I want to see your absolute best.
What, you want me to go to the 30?
I think you can go to the 50.
The 50? I can go to the 50 if nobody's on my back.
I think you can do it with Jeremy on your back. But even if you can, I want you to promise me you're going to do your best.
All right.
Your best.
Okay.
You going to give me your best?
I'm going to give you my best.
All right, one more thing. I want you to do it blindfolded.
Why?
Because I don't want you giving up at a certain point when you could go further. Get down. Jeremy, get on his back. I get a good tight hold, Jeremy. All right, let's go, Brock. Keep your knees off the ground, just your hands and feet. There you go. A little bit left. A little bit left.
I bet he does.
There you go. Show me good effort. That way, Brock. You keep coming. There you go. It's a good start. A little bit left. A little bit left. There you go, Brock. Good strength. That's it, Brock. That's it.
I'm out of the 20 yet.
Forget the 20. You give me your best. You keep going. That's it. No, don't stop, Brock. You got more in you than that.
I ain't done. Just resting a second.
You got to keep moving. Let's keep moving. Let's go. Don't quit till you got nothing left. There you go. Keep moving. Keep moving. Keep moving, Brock. That's it. You keep driving. Keep your knees off the ground. Keep driving it. Your very best. Your very best. Your very best. Keep moving, Brock. That's it. That's it. That's it. Keep going. Don't quit on me. Keep going. Keep driving it. Keep driving. Keep your knees off the ground. That's it. Your very best. Don't quit on me. Your very best. Keep driving. Keep driving. There you go. There you go. That's it. You keep driving. Keep your knees off the ground. Keep driving it. Don't quit till you got nothing left. Keep moving, Brock. That's it. That's it. That's it. Keep going. I want everything you got. Come on. Keep going.
It hurts.
Don't quit on me. Your very best. Keep driving. Keep driving. There you go. There you go.
He's heavy.
I know he's heavy.
I'm bad out of strength.
Then you negotiate with your body to find more strength, but don't you give up on me, Brock. You keep going. You hear me? You keep going. You're doing good. You keep going. Do not quit on me. You keep going.
It hurts.
I know it hurts. You keep going. You keep going. It's all hard from here. 30 more steps. You keep going, Brock. Come on. Keep going.
Burn.
And let it burn.
My arms are burning.
It's all hard. You keep going, Brock. Come on. Come on. Keep going. You promised me your best. Your best. Don't stop. Keep going.
Too hard.
It's not too hard. You keep going. Come on, Brock. Give me more. Give me more. Keep going. 20 more steps. 20 more. Keep going, Brock. Give me your best. Don't quit! No! Keep going! Keep going! Keep going! Don't quit! Don't quit! Don't quit! Brock Kelly, you don't quit! Keep going! Keep going! Go, Brock Kelly! You don't quit on me! No! You keep going! You keep going! Go, Brock! 10 more steps! 10 more! 10 more! 10 more! Keep going! Don't quit! Give me your
heart!
You can! You can! 5 more! 5 more! Come on, Brock! Come on! Don't quit! Don't quit! Come on, Brock! 2 more! 1 more!
It's gotta be 50! It's gotta be 50! I don't have any more!
Look up, Brock. You're in the end zone. Brock, you are the most influential player on this team. If you walk around defeated, so will they. Don't tell me you can't give me more than what I've been seeing. You just carried a 140-pound man across this whole field on your arms. Brock, I need you. God's gifted you with the ability of leadership. Don't waste it.
Coach?
Can I count on you?
Yes.
Coach?
What is it, Jeremy?
I weigh 160.
right. Who's next?
What about us? You may be the most influential person on your team, in your family, in your circle. And if we walk around with our heads down, our faces in the dirt, saying, I can't do this, I can't go any farther, everyone else behind us will do the same. Older adults, if you walk around with your heads hanging, the world's not like it used to be, the world's coming down to its knees and nothing is good in the world anymore. The younger parents behind you will walk around with their heads down. Parents, if you walk around with your heads down saying, it's just too hard for my teens to go through life. It's too, you know, I can't stand what you're doing anymore. Why don't you shape up? Or maybe you tell them, you know, you have too many pressures in this world. I can't push you to go any harder because I'm afraid you may cave in because a psychologist over here says that discipline is not worth it. Discipline damages a kid. If you walk around with your head down, so will your kids. Teenagers, children, if you walk around with your heads down, saying, I can't stand out above anybody else. I have to be in my own secluded little corner, and I have to fit in with everybody. I can't fit in here, or I can't make myself stand out because that's just not me. To be something more than what everybody else around me is being. If you walk around with your head down, everyone else will follow you. It takes more than seeing a problem and stating a problem to take care of a problem. We must step up. Even if the ones who should be doing it are not doing it, that's all the more of a challenge and a reason for us to realize that God will back us up if it's a problem that needs to be fixed, a need that needs to be met. Someone has got to step up. Who are you going to be? Are you going to be a Saul who cowers in his tent, even though you might be the person that needs to be taken care of it? Or are you going to be a David who, even though you may have no business initially stepping in to the scenario that you may have in front of you, you know God's going to back you up and you have the faith that He's going to back you up. And so because of that faith, you're going to help do something about it and lead people on to strengthen the kingdom, to strengthen the church, to strengthen our homes, to strengthen our workplaces, to strengthen our schools and our sports teams and our extracurricular clubs. Who are you going to be? Are you ready to be God's leaders? If so, there's no better time than now to make that choice. It may be that somebody here tonight needs to respond to the gospel call to put on Christ in baptism. Here's water. What prevents you? Or maybe you've wandered away from the fold of God. Maybe not been the leader that you should have been. He's waiting and calling for us to be the Christians that He knows that we can be. If you need to respond, please do so right now while we stand and sing.